Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I thought I'd get a short one in. This week is colonoscopy prep, so I won't be eating a lot. I'll be grouchy, but I haven't hit that point yet. So let's talk some comics. What's interesting? What happened this week in comics? I don't know. I've been sort of out of the news comic realm. Been watching a lot of Disney Plus. Between Loki, Star Wars, Bad Batch, and Star Wars, Clone Wars, it's been like my primary source of watching streaming lately. I marshaled through season four of Star Wars Clone Wars. And now I'm already in season five. That's been my exercise show along with Bad Batch. So tomorrow morning will be, I'm all caught up on Bad Batch, but tomorrow morning I'll get the latest one because today's Friday. I finished watching Loki, and I'll be honest with you, it didn't rock my world. I didn't like it. I think it's the first Marvel property that I didn't like. I don't know why. What it felt like to me, it felt like it was like a record and repeat. Like it was seeing the same thing over and over again, even though it wasn't. That's how I felt. And the speech by the big bad, oh man, that just killed me. I couldn't take it. It lasted forever. It's got to be one of the longest speeches I've ever heard. And it was just like, all I was like, I felt like I was in the Peanuts. It's like I didn't want to hear it. It was like wah 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 wah, and it didn't really come to a conclusion. So I didn't like it. This is the first one, I go back to Spider-Man with Nicholas Hammond. I enjoyed that. Doctor Strange in the 70s, enjoyed that. I enjoyed all the team ups with the Incredible Hulk in the TV show with that funky Thor. I enjoyed Spider Super Stories and Electric Company. I enjoyed those really old 60s Marvel Thor cartoons and Fantastic Four. I like Herbie the Robot. so that, I mean, I compare it. This is just the first thing I just didn't like. I really didn't. I like all the Blade movies. I enjoyed all the movies leading up to both Hulk movies, both leading up to the MCU, all the Punisher movies. This is the first property that I really just it didn't work for me. And I think he's a fantastic Loki, and it has a lot of Easter eggs, but man, the only thing that clicked for me was Alligator Loki, and he didn't have that much screen time, and he was just biting someone's arm. I thought that was cool. But if you liked it, a lot of my friends seemed to like it, so it makes me happy that there are people that enjoyed it. But it is the first property that just didn't. I even sort of liked the Catwoman movie, which was my least favorite, the Halle Berry movie. I'd rather watch the Catwoman Halle Berry movie than Loki. And that's pretty low. So I don't know. Maybe it was the mood. I don't know. I can't explain it. There is some stuff going on, so maybe it's emotionally affecting me, but I have enjoyed other stuff. I saw Black Widow, and I would say that that is personally one of my favorite Marvel movies. Those of you that know me will laugh at my favorite Marvel movie because it's Iron Man 3. I love that thing. And I would say Black Widow's got to be in my top three. I really liked it. That dinner table scene, I God, that was magic. But it clicked with me on so many levels. I loved the spy thing. I didn't mind the changes that were there for Taskmaster. I thought it was really good. I thought it was very adventurous. I liked I liked the Red Guardian quite a bit. I liked the Black Widow's sister. It just was a good. I thought from beginning to the end, everything worked for me on that movie. But that's what's been going on in terms of things I've seen and been keeping up. Bad Batch is really working for me. Some of the vehicles and stuff that are introduced in like Clone Wars and Bad Batch, God, I would love to have them as toys. They just have an incredible design. Those funky AT-ATs that were there. The thing that's so weird to me that I just think is so bizarre is you're rooting for the good guys, but when you look at the big picture of Clone Wars, the good guys are the bad guys because of who's really leading them. Palpatine and what he turns out to be. And it's so weird. It's almost like they're fighting with themselves. But I like that concept is like somebody bad is leading the good. And I don't know, it's very strange. So I'm really happy with what they're doing with the Star Wars stuff. And the Star Wars stuff has been like I still got to get into Rebels, but I'll probably take a break. After I finish Clone Wars, I'll probably move on to something different just to change it up a bit. But I do want to revisit Rebels now that I have going through the Star Wars animated series and enjoying them. But anyway, let's get to some questions. Last week I asked for a lot of questions and I got a slew of them towards the end of when I was getting ready to record, and I wanted to save some, and I have quite a few. I might only get into a couple this episode. But Nick and Aaron gave me a lot of questions. Aaron Bell asks, which comic creators of today would you think would fit the best in the golden or silver ages? That's tough because those aren't. If you said Bronze Age, I would have a lot more answers, but the Golden Age is pretty dry and it's good reads from an historical perspective, and you get fascinated with what was happening. But that's tough, man. Like I can't think. I can think of a lot of them that are like influenced by the Bronze Age that I absolutely adore, but the Golden Age, I can't think of one current creator that I a lot of them like Geoff Johns or and James Robinson and are influenced by the historical characters of the Golden Age. And there's a lot more of writers that do stuff like that with Golden Age characters, but they don't write like it. Is that, are you asking what best fit? Yeah, man, with the Golden Age, you really got me there because I don't think there's any current writers today that would fit in that time. Even like Tom Scioli seems to me like he's a Bronze Age influenced Kirby guy, not a Golden Age or Silver Age. So, man, I maybe Jeff Lemire could do it because he has like the Black Hammer and it's sort of like Silver Age-ish, but with a modern sensibility. So maybe Jeff Lemire would fit into that world. I would select like diverse creators that could do it, like Jeff Lemire, Matt Kent. In terms of art style, those are even unique styles, because back then they would have, the Golden Age characters looked pretty similar. Like if you compare a Namor with a Human Torch with a Superman, they all had this like sort of Golden Age flavor. And I don't know. Like everybody I know is like a Kirby, but not influenced by Kirby Golden Age. It's by the Bronze Age that sort of defined. And I think that might be because most of the creators are my age, influenced by the Bronze Age. So like I don't know a lot that are influenced by the Golden or Silver Age. I know I don't know a lot that could write in that template. I know a lot of them that appreciate the Golden Age and Silver Age. Maybe James Robinson could do it. But he's got a modern sensibility to his style though too. So he definitely understands it. Roy Thomas, he probably could pull it off. If he were to write again, he could probably write something a Silver Age, even though I think of Roy Thomas as a Bronze Age editor and writer, more than Golden Age, but he's an historian, so he knows a lot. Mark Waid, I think could pull it off. He's one of those guys that, at least back in the day, I don't know if his memory's gotten worse like mine and he's got more white spots, but I went to conventions, and one of the fun thing about a Mark Waid panel was he had a knowledge, like he'd have this little segment in all of his panels, and I've seen like two or three of them, and it was called Stump Mark Waid. And the goal of that was all these people in cons, if they had bought comics, they can just lift it up. And he'd sort of say, like, Fantastic Four 22, and this is what happened. This is the year it came out. That kind of thing. So there was a few Golden Age things he knocked out as well. So Mark Waid, I think could actually pull that off. In terms of artists, I've always been a writer guy, so it's easier for me to think of writers. But I think Michael Lark, writer, like artists that draw in that style, and there's a lot of that style going on right now. I was reading X-Men number 4, written by Hickman, and I can't remember the artist on there, but it almost has like a Golden Age feel to some of the panels where they are there in some of the panels. Yeah, but this is a fun question. Makes me think about a lot of other stuff, but it's tough, man. Especially because I've read a lot of Silver Age comics, especially on the DC side. And quite a few in the Marvel, but I'm a kid of comics in the 70s. Like trying to get every comic since 1973 is like DC, and that is definitely Bronze Age. And I have a lot of Silver and Golden Age books, but it's harder for me to like think out of the top of my head styles and stuff. Yeah, but that's a good question. It's a lot to ponder, and maybe if I think of some that I come across in terms of artists that could pull off a Golden Age or Silver Age type style, I'll definitely bring it up. Who is the most pretentious hero and pretentious villain. That's a tough one, especially with hero. But villain, there's a lot of pretentiousness. It depends, you know, if your shit don't stink and you drink tea a certain way. I guess with the most pretentious villain that I think is pretentious, I would go with Dr. Doom. And I'm gonna give a couple of examples. He really thinks very highly of himself if you read FF books. Like he thinks he's the best and everybody else is underneath him. In terms of his mind, and he probably has like he drinks a lot of tea, I assume, and smokes and eats the best stuff. And so yeah, I'd go with Dr. Doom. And the interesting thing is the hero, I would say Reed Richards. That guy's pretty stuck up, man. He walks like he's got his sphincter on tight all the time. And I would think that he wants the best of everything as well. In terms of technology, and it's weird that they're villains of each other. And then the one that crosses the border between heroes and villains, or his shit don't stink, and I would go with Submariner. So that's what makes Marvel supervillain team up such an interesting comic to read, is because you have two arrogant, pretentious leaders. Kings, rulers, trying to team up, and their personalities are so alike that it causes a lot of strange things. So that's Submariner. He could go in the line of hero or villain, depending on when he is there. So I hope that answers your question. Sometimes pretentious is hard to define. I think of Martin from Nerdy Legion. He's pretty pretentious in terms of food and stuff like that. But when I think of like superheroes, it almost gets into like a pretentious slash arrogance, and the shit don't stink kind of thing. Where I think of pretentious more like Bill Bomer or Martin. My friends, they have this pretentious aura. Even Nick does too. But they don't, they're not arrogant. And I don't feel that they feel that their shit don't stink. Well, maybe Bomer does. But I tease 'cause I love. But that's one thing I always told Barb. I said I only tease the ones I love. If I don't tease you, it's kind of an indication that I don't feel comfortable with you and I can't come down to a certain level with you. But yeah, that word is tough, man. I can think of a lot of real life pretentious people, but not heroes and villains, because I'll categorize pretentious a little different, like the shit don't stink, and it's those three. And you could think of Booster maybe, but he's got a lot of self-doubt, and he lives by his means, whatever that may be. But pretentious, yeah, I think he wants to be. I just don't think he could ever get there. Except when they had the island of Kahui Hui or whatever that was called, him and Blue Beetle. Vandal Savage. Ooh. Sebastian Shaw, those guys. Emma Frost. Okay, so there's three more pretentious villains slash heroes. Emma definitely is very pretentious. She's only wants the best. Sebastian Shaw, same cut from the same cloth. So yeah, there's another good question to ponder. Good stuff from Nick Wetmore. He also said, Nick Wetmore said, "I love the Batman Shadow crossover. What crossover would you have the Shadow in next?" The Batman Shadow, this was Steve Orlando. It was really me and Bill talk about Steve Orlando, like some things we like and some things we don't. And the Batman Shadow is something I really liked. And I liked Batman Shadow Batman. But his question is, what should the Shadow go with next? Shadow Doc Savage would be interesting in the fact that they're both pulpish and they both have like these followers that help them on missions. Like, Tom Strong is like a really knockoff of Doc Savage. I think Shadow would go really good with that. Just like Batman. Batman's pulpish. The Crimson Avenger from DC Comics would be another good one to have in there. I think Vigilante, the motorcycle Vigilante, would also be fun, even though the times are slightly different. I think that would be a lot of fun to have the DC Comics Cowboy Vigilante, the guy that rides the motorcycle and has the cowboy hat with the red bandana. That one would be fun. If I go to the Marvel, I don't know a lot of pulpish Marvel characters. Green Hornet would always be good. Spider, Miss Fury would be another character I'd like to see that. Yeah, a lot of Dynamite characters would fit that because it either has beautiful women like Vampirella and Deja Torres, or it has pulp characters. The Lone Ranger would be a lot of fun, even though they're kind of from they're different times. It would be fun to throw the Shadow in like something before. Tarzan, pulp. Yes, Tarzan in the Shadow. That would be interesting. Lord Greystoke meets the Shadow in New York City. How about that? The King of the Jungle in New York City tackles the Shadow. That could be interesting. Nick also says he loves the Mole Men. The Mole Man and his Mole Men in the subterranean mid-earth. What type of hybrid being would you drop in the Marvel Universe? Hybrid. I don't know what I would drop in the Marvel Universe. I like a lot of the Serpent Society that were in Captain America and Mark Grenwald's run, which are kind of like hybrid snake types, Copperhead and Anaconda and all of those, Blackadder. There's so many of those snake, Diamondback, snake-related characters that I really love. The Mole Man just seemed to me like they were, beings with not a lot of intelligence, and they would just march to whatever the Mole Man told them. Whereas I think the Snake Serpent Society, they had a little more personality attached to go along with their snake attributes and powers. Man Bull. I can't think of anyone I'd want to drop into the Marvel Universe. I sure like a honey badger. because Honey Badger don't give a shit, and I think that would be a good character to have in Ambush, but an Ambush Bug slash Deadpool, fourth world breaking, Honey Badger don't give a shit kind of hybrid. Gotta choose AIM or Hydra. Definitely Hydra. AIM is just a bunch of smart guys with hats. Beehive guys. And I think that's what I'll leave off, and then I have a question from Dallow, which is something I'm gonna have to think about. He says, and that'll be coming in the next episode, the top five comics in your collection based on emotional connection. I like that. Matter of fact, it's not something I really have to think about, because all the covers are in my head. But I will have to look up the numbers, because I don't remember numbers like some people, or creators. Like Nick Wetmore can knock off a creator based on the art team and stuff, and I'll know what happens in the issue, but I don't really pay attention to the creative team. Some of the times I do, like some of the obvious stuff, like something's written by Lemire or something like that. But if it's just an average Avengers book I read, I don't know if I remember who did what. Yeah, I remember who's currently on it, like Jason Aaron, but if you just popped an Avengers title up and showed me a cover, and it didn't have the creators on the cover, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I might be able to tell you who drew the cover, especially if it's Kirby or somebody that has a distinctive style. But yeah, that'll be a fun question, and I can remove these from bookmarks and start with Dallow's question in the next episode. So yeah, we'll go with that. So, on that note, we'll get to some comic books that will take us through June. So, we'll start with let me see, how did that happen? Yeah, we'll start with May 24th through May 30th. Or maybe I screwed that up. No, this is right. That's where I left off, I think, in the last episode. And we'll start at the bottom, and we'll see if I watched anything that week. That was a lot of material I watched. I think I was bagging and boarding comics, and I got sucked into a bunch of shark movies. There was Shark Night 3D. This was really good. It had the guy, the veterinarian that is in Schitt's Creek. He was one of the main characters, and if I remember, oh no, she was in Piranha 3DD. But I watched Piranha 3D again, and Ving Rhames is in there, and the girl that's in Karate Kid, I can't think, she was the sheriff mother, and Conley, what's his name? The guy that was in Stand By Me and Sliders, I think, he was in there. But I love Piranha 3D. I gave it a 4 out of 5, and in Shark Night a 4 out of 5. I love shark movies. Shark Night is sort of a bunch of college friends. A girl has a house on an island, like a lake island. It's not a ocean island, but it's tied to the ocean because there's a little bit of salt water. So a lot of the salt water flows into this lake slash river that leads to the lake. So there is salt, and they go there, and there's sharks in the water. There shouldn't be sharks, but there's sharks. And it turns out that somebody there is doing that on purpose so they can film it and sell the video to Shark Week. It sounds ridiculous, but it's pretty cool. And then Piranha 3D is sort of when a bunch of like subterranean dinosaur type, more primitive than a normal piranha, are unleashed because something like a crevice opens in the ocean and lets these things through, and they haunt a small town's oceanfront. But that was really entertaining. Those That Wish Me Dead, that was HBO Max. That was Angelina Jolie. And if I had to say anything, it's sort of a firefighter, like a forest firefighter that she is, has to protect a kid who's being hunted down to be killed because the father had some information on somebody really wealthy who was not a good person and was going to release that information to the press. And it feels like a forest fighter type cliffhanger movie. So if you like cliffhanger, I'd highly recommend Those That Wish Me Dead. That week I also started on Netflix Jupiter's Legacy and Breaking Bad, the final season. I left off with the death of Chicken Man in Breaking Bad, because I thought it like ended. Like, not I knew there was another season, but it felt like it had the best climax that I didn't even want to go to the next season. So it was a weird situation. But me and Barb were recently in Albuquerque in Old Town, and there was a Breaking Bad store because Breaking Bad was real big in Albuquerque. They have tours and everything because it was filmed in Albuquerque. So it's fun to watch because as people drive by and stuff, you can recognize the car wash that was there, everything that's there. You can recognize the street names and different things. And for somebody who's lived in Albuquerque, it's a lot of fun. But Breaking Bad was, I started it and it was really cool. So that's what was watched. There was a total of 22 comics, 7 Marvel, 1 Kickstarter, 6 Image, 1 DC, 2 Awesome, and 5 Avatar. We'll start with the 3 out of 5s. The 3 out of 5s mean I just liked it. It's Batman Fortnite number 3. And this one was a slugfest between Batman and Snake Eyes, which I was really looking forward to, as Catwoman escaped in the prior issue. What I mean, she escaped, is she actually got back to Gotham from the Fortnite Island world. And it wasn't as like great as I thought it would be. Like you put like Snake Eyes and Batman together, and you're like, ah, that's like an ultimate, you know. I love it for the fact that when will we see Batman again with Snake Eyes? Like historically, this is a must-buy, especially if you like both characters, because we'll never see this. We'll never see it. So it now exists in print. So then we get to the 4 out of 5s. We had The Coven, Volume 1, Number 6. This was one that I had to order from my comic shop. It was an awesome comics. Did I give the totals? Yeah, I think I did. Yeah, I did. I'm starting to lose my mind. These strange goblins put a spell on Phantom. It's spelled Fantom. She's sort of like a vampire that belongs to Coven, and she put Scratch under her control to fight with Spellcaster. Spellcaster is kind of like the witch, and Scratch is kind of like the werewolf, if you want to put them to associated monsters. And they form the Coven. They got out of the goblin control, and then had to be con and then it said to be continued. This was interesting, both from a writing perspective and a continuation perspective. It said to be continued, but I already read Volume 2, Number 1, and there was not a continuation. So I don't know what happened. And there was an article from Jeff Loeb saying they were struck by lightning as a company. And I'm not sure what that meant because you can take the literal sense of that. This was a letter in the back of the issue. You can take a literal sense about. I even tweeted Rob Liefeld just to hope I got, some understanding of what that meant. But unfortunately, he didn't answer me. But I was wondering if it really meant struck by lightning and they lost the laptop and the stories, so they just decided to start over again, or if it was something like financially, and that's just a figurative term. So yeah, that was The Coven, Volume 1, Number 6. Ian Churchill, Jeff Loeb. Great stuff, man. I mean, I love The Coven, and this was me sort of wanting to finish all the Coven issues. And I did. I finally completed all the Coven. Not with this order, but with another order that came in. There was a couple of Coven that I needed to get, and I did get them. We have Flesh-Eating Cheerleaders from Outer Space. This was a Kickstarter. I liked it a lot, so much to the fact that I immediately went on to Kickstarter to see if there was a number two, and there was. So I supported the second one based on the content of the first one. But this is like some alien slugs. We've seen movies with those slugs that move and they control people. Well, that's sort of like that. They come from space and spread their evil as they go into the bodies of cheerleaders and kill other people. But after the slug was in them, they don't seem to remember when they, come around. They don't seem to remember what happened. So they think they don't know that they killed these people. We have The Coven, Tooth and Nail, number one half and number one. This was when the Coven switched from Awesome to Avatar. Yeah, that's right, Avatar. And this was interesting, and I think I've only heard Rob talk about this briefly. I would love to have more information on this time and what drove him to do this. But this was Avatar sort of leasing the characters from Rob. And Coven was one of the titles. There's other titles like Glory that we'll be talking about. But Tooth and Nail, Spellcaster is attacked by Dark Wolf, which is the brother to Phantom. And Dark Wolf was a twin to Phantom. And she's the vampire and he's the werewolf. And Scratch and Phantom come to her rescue. Spellcaster is bitten by Dark Wolf, who really wants to kill his sister Phantom because she threw him off a cliff 200 years ago. As a pack of wolves attack the Coven, it is to race to find Malachi, who may be able to save Spellcaster. He manages to save her, but becomes a wolf. I don't know why I said that. Because the Scratch's fire is able to burn the evil away. I don't know what I meant by that. Later, Phantom is attacked by Stalker as she tries to drain the human of blood. Stalker is like Blade and a former lover. That was an interesting thing too. They get away and are seeking the Ravening. And that's fascinating too, because the Ravening I wasn't familiar with at the time that Avatar was publishing this. I'm gonna give you the just to give you a time frame. You kind of need to know this to get an idea of what Avatar was publishing. This is pre-crossed Tooth Coven. Tooth and Nail. What is it? Maybe if I type Tooth and Nail, it'll show up. Tooth and Nail. Yep, that's it. So this was written, even though Rob leased the material, Rob was just sort of an editor for these books. It was written by Robert Lugubini, and artist was Ron Adrian. So it didn't even have like Jeff Loeb, the creators of Coven, Jeff Loeb and Ian Churchill. So it was a weird time, but it did have like Rob Liefeld as an editor, and this was from 2002. And the Ravening is interesting. I came familiar with them because they became part of the Boundless imprint, which is sort of like the nasty, sexy version of Avatar, owned by the same company, I think, but they came out on a different imprint. But the Ravening was originally part of Avatar. Like, you care. A lot of you guys are like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then there was the Coven Spellcaster number one. Avatar didn't like try to make series. They tried to make one shots and only 3-issue arc. I don't know if they were like playing with the idea that we're on lease and we can only get out 3 issues a year, or what the plan was. But Spellcaster, it takes place before Dark Sister. I don't even know if I read these in order. And it's kind of a recap of her origin and her relationship with her mom. That comes back into play, by the way. She is told by Scythe that she has her mother in hell and will trade her for the spell to open up a crate. She sends Maelstrom to get her, but Spellcaster goes to hell with Maelstrom. It turns out the mom is a demon in disguise and not the real mom. Spellcaster rescues Tundra, her owl, and escapes with a demon posing as her mom. I do think this is a one shot, but it has a lot to do with Dark Sister, because the next book is the Coven Dark Sister number one half to one, which is also Avatar. I have to check my texts, okay, to make sure Barb's not coming. The Coven is disbanded, and it's up to Spellcaster to reunite the team to save Phantom from her evil sister. Spellcaster's sister caused chaos by bringing the Museum of Natural History to life when trying to bring back her mother. So that's how it ties back to Spellcaster number one, because in Spellcaster number one, she had to go to hell to try to rescue her mother, and it showed the relationship, sort of, with the Dark Sister. This establishes that, because the motive is the Dark Sister is trying to reincarnate the mom to kill her again because she hates her so much. It's so weird. And then she's doing that with trying to get revenge on the sister. Yeah, sounds like a soap opera, doesn't it? Now it's up to Scratch and Spellcaster to stop her sister and rescue Phantom. That's how she actually, the sister of Spellcaster tried to attack Phantom because she knew that she can get to her because she was part of the Coven to lure her sister Spellcaster out. The Coven Dark Sister number one half to one. We then get into me reading a lot of Marvel, X-Men. I've been trying to read Marvel at night to try to catch up on the Hickman titles. I'm currently on X-Men, but I started with some of the more obscure stuff and then read forward. But this is X-Force number 1 through 7. Professor X and others are killed by an organization that used Domino skin to mask their attack on a Krakoa. And that was kind of a shocking thing because Krakoa can resurrect the mutants. But right off the bat, they assassinated Professor X. Wolverine and Kid Omega go after the organization and try to rescue Domino. The team does rescue Domino. Colossus is healing after his ordeal in Russia, in which he died. Professor X and the board decide they need a team to strike back at humanity, a covert team. And they get Wolverine, Kid Omega, Jean Grey, Domino, Beast, and Sage. Forge makes them plant base weapons. Man, I don't even know how to spell. I just said Forge makes. He's part of the team, but not really. He makes them plant based weapons based on Krakoa. And the humans keep invading the island and striking against the humans that protect or help the mutants. So they hate the mutants so much that they not only go after the mutants, they go after the humans that believe in what the mutants are doing on Krakoa or support them, either by government or by speaking in a positive light about the mutants. Yeah, they really hate the mutants. We have The Coven Volume 2, Number 1. This is when I wanted to read 6 because I was missing it, and then jump into the next one and see how it continued, but it didn't continue. But the Coven mourn the loss of member Kama. They are attacked by Crypt Ninjas during the ceremony. During the fight, Black Mass is teleported to hell by Satana, daughter of Lucifer, to obtain a book she needs. The team go after the book, only to find that she is in possession of Supreme. And I really wanted to dig into the next issue, but that's in a short box somewhere, because this is one I was missing, the other one I had. And I've already read it, but I don't remember it. So I kind of wanted to continue and see how that clash with the Coven and Supreme worked. That was from Awesome Comics, not Avatar. We then got into The Crow. This was the Todd McFarlane company that adapted The Crow. It was Crow 1 and 2 and 4 and 5 from Todd McFarlane Productions. It is the retelling of Eric and Shelley, who are tragically murdered by a gang: Tintin, Skank, T-Bird, Funboy, Top Dollar, and Gideon. And if those names sound familiar, that's because it was right out of the movie and the comic book. But those the Crow movie really made an impression on me in terms of the Crow and the film. And me wanting to read The Crow, I had to go get the trade of the original. I wish I had the original single monthly comics by James O'Barr, but I bought the trade and read that when the movie came out, and I loved it. And I started to get some Crow, and then it recently led me on a tangent to get Kitchen Sink Crow comics. Yeah, this also involves the little girl Sarah, which is very important. And the cop trying to investigate their deaths. A grandmother is killed protecting children. New powers are trying to take over. Not that Top Dollar is out of the picture, or now that he's out of the picture, because Crow killed Top Dollar, so somebody else wants control. But that image, this is the Crow that really was clicking for me, and it felt familiar and fun and led me to buy more Crow, but I started to read the follow-on to this arc and I didn't like it as much, and the names weren't as familiar anymore. So they took me out of the familiar, and I started to not like the title as much. But when I was in the familiar, I really liked it. That's why I got a 4 out of 5. And then the 5 out of 5 is one of my favorite comics of the year. Ha Ha, number 3 and 4. A broke mime tries to find his way to success and finds a discarded robot in a junkyard. He then tries to make money when the robot with the robot and is taken away from him by the company that created him, saying, "Hey, we own him, we're taking him away." It leads to his tragic death when he tries to save the robot from the corporation that took him. They took him back, but they discarded the robot and then wanted to get it back because they saw a mime working with this robot, with their property. At least I don't consider it their property because it was thrown in the garbage. So it doesn't make sense. And it's pretty tragic. You have some comedy and tragedy in this series. The one thing about Ha Ha is you get like a sense of all kinds of different emotions. Take a drink. So then we have the next story is made up take on Pixar's the movie Up. If you've seen the Up movie, Up had me in tears for many reasons that I don't want to go into. It's very personal, but this had the same sort of theme, and it's about a boy and his grandfather and a drunk clown that is sucked into a balloon. And I think the gist of the story is more about the boy and the grandfather and their relationship. The grandfather lost his wife and sort of became distant with the daughter and the grandson. And this was kind of like reuniting them when they found the balloon. But what's going on in the balloon is like an acid trip. It's like the clown got sucked. The clown is a drunk in this comic. And you don't know if what you see is really happening, but I guess he's so high and drunk that he got sucked into the balloon. It's so weird. That's the weird part of it, but the rest of it plays out like the movie Up. Really cool concept, good execution. That takes us to May 31st. Harley's looking at me like, "What the fuck, Daddy? You should take me for something." June 6th. 2021. We'll start at the bottom. There were 27 comics that week. Good distribution, but still not up to what I should be reading. I think I should be reading 40 a week, and that's still not enough when you get like 75 a week or more. But we had 27. Let's go with what I got. We had one Source Point Press, one Second Psych Publishing, one Scout, 11 Marvel, two Image, one IDW, one Hero Tomorrow, four Dark Horse, one DC, and one Behemoth, and three Avatar. So we'll start at the 3 out of 5s. This was a lot of 3 out of 5s. Interesting enough, we have the Crow number 6, and this sort of continued what I was talking about is the Image title, and it was not familiar anymore, and I wasn't into it as much. But Eric faces off against Sin to save a friend when Walker, which is a Native American, kills her. Walker is similar to the Crow, but instead of the Crow, he forms a wolf. I think that. That's not Barb. That's CNN. The CDC warns COVID vaccines might not protect immunocompromised people. But didn't recommend they get the extra vaccine. But didn't what? Warns COVID-19 vaccines might not protect people who are immune compromised. Have been effective for them and encourage them to take precautions if they're not vaccinated. People who are immune compromised should be counseled about the potential to reduced immune responses to COVID-19 vaccines. So I guess if your immune system's compromised, in some way, the vaccine might not protect you. There's some really strange things going on. There was a pool party in Vegas. 11 people, well, they were all nurses and doctors, all had immunizations and all got COVID. They had mild symptoms, just like sneezing and coughing and sore throat, but they got better because they say the immunization helped them. But now what they're saying is, if your immune system's compromised, the shot might not help you. So take ne necessary precautions Which I think most of them are anyway. I still wear a mask, by the way. I don't wear it so much at work, but if I'm in a work situation where I'm close to a bunch of people, I do wear it. And anytime I go to the grocery store or some unknown place where I don't know what the situation is or what the work rules are, I just try to play it safe. Yes, I'm more protecting the people that around me than myself, but it still gives you that 10 to 30% extra precaution. To me, 30% is worth the wear if it'll help you 30% not get it. So that was a sidetrack. So we talked about the crow. We got Lady Freedom number one. This is Lady Freedom is work. This is from Second Sight. The art style on this was sort of like Bart Sears, but like a Bart Sears that wasn't quite there yet. He had a similar style, but later Lady Freedom is working with the government to take down the Black Valkyrie and her soldiers from disrupting America. She works with a sidekick called Scarlet and Camille, who has telekinesis powers. And it leads into number two. And the only thing I could say is I haven't read number two yet. But I did receive a note from DCBS that the publisher canceled number three. So I don't know if we'll ever have a conclusion to that particular story. Didn't say why they canceled it. Because they're not going out of business. The last previews, they were publishing more books than ever. So I don't know why they didn't chose not to. Could have been a dispute between the creative team and the publisher. Could be a lot of things. If you know why Lady Freedom number three was canceled, please hit me up on Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch and let me know. I'd love to know. I love to know stuff like this. We have Cult of Dracula number one. I like the concept better here than the execution. The covers are absolutely beautiful. I believe this was a Kickstarter that became a comic book. At least the first issue was, and the second issue might have been direct to print, non-Kickstarter. But a reporter team goes to investigate a cult where the patrons of the cult were slaughtered, and it looked like vampires. The reporter and cameraman are Mina and Jonathan Harker. So you know those names from like your Dracula mythology. Who meet Lucy, that's also a name from the Dracula mythology, and a very strange man with a gun. I don't think that's from Dracula mythology. The priest is Van Helsing, so that's also from the mythology. We will see where it goes, but it was pretty strange so far. We got Seeds trade paperback 1 through 4. This was one that I thought I would like more because I'm usually like big on what was her name? Why am I blanking on her? She's one of my favorite writers. Seed. The Seeds. Officially. It's Anna Senti. I couldn't think of the last name. I had a brain fart. And David Aja. So I thought I would like this a lot more than I did, but it was a dystopian story. It is a beautiful book, but a dystopian story about a giant wall. On one side, they have the technology, on the other side, they don't. There's a reporter who works for a tabloid and uncovers a story about a woman who's in a relationship with a real alien. Later, she is convinced that if she reveals the truth via an article, her friend will end up dead. There is also a technology copy trying to kill bees and use electronic pollinators because that would make their business more profitable. If the bees die, humanity dies. My write-up sounds better than like. Then I enjoyed it. It sounds really cool. I don't know. We have the 3 out of 5, The Crow, Leith. This is an IDW, and this is a different Crow. He is Null Narcos, a popular performer and a freak circus sideshow. He's able to endure horrific violence on his body without pain, but outside his nightly shows, Null is in a blank state with only faint but disturbing memories of who he was before revealed. When other performers begin dying mysteriously, Null is haunted by a golden-eyed stalker and begins to remember a life he thought long gone, a life of murder, terror, and black wings. That is The Crow, Leith. We then get into that was from IDW, because IDW currently owns the property. That's fairly current. That title is, I think, the last Crow title to come from IDW. We then get into the 4 out of 5s. We have Punchline, Vaudevillains. This is one that you can grab from Hero Tomorrow, either via Kickstarter or via previews, and they come out almost on the same time. I don't usually like that, and if that happens, I usually go with the flow, and I go with previews because it's a lot cheaper than a Kickstarter. But because I like this writer so much, I want to support his Kickstarter, so he's one of the exceptions to my rules, which I think I talked about in just the latest released Mike M's Weekly Reads, where Drew asked me some of the do's and don'ts of Kickstarters. And I was in Drew's show for Comics for Fun and Profit, if you go listen to the latest one, not the one that's going to come out on the 17th, but the one that came out the prior week. I was actually on it, so give it a listen, Comics for Fun and Profit. Plus, that's one of my favorite shows, so it's not just because I'm on the show. You should listen to it anyway. Oh, I don't think I gave. Yeah, I gave myself credit. But Punchline ties into Apama and Tap Dance Killer, as vaudevillains are introduced along with Punchline, who is a former boxer and now a superpowered clown. Tap Dance is with her father and brought back her mother back from the dead. But the mother's not herself. She's kind of like brought back from the dead, but she's like more like a zombie corpse. At the end, it looks to be like a slug out with Apama and Punchline. So very tightly knit universe he's creating between Apama, Tap Dance Killer, Punchline, and my favorite, Bloom. Bloom is incredible. It's like a step beyond everything he's done before. X-Force number 8 and 10. This is the new title, which we just talked about in the previous one. Domino and Colossus go to Russia because they track her luck and discover a lot of Domino's skin grafted mercenaries, and they kill them. So those were the how they actually got on Krakoa, is they grafted, they peeled her skin off of her, and they put them onto these super soldiers, and then dropped them on Krakoa to kill Professor X. Domino dies and is resurrected, healed, but she does not remember all the details of her imprisonment. Seems like the bond is forming between Domino and Colossus. Maybe not just a bond, maybe physical attraction. Domino kills Inverse Domino. Tierra Verde is a plant infested by a beast and sends Wolverine, Domino, and Kid Omega. They get compromised, and he sends Jean, Sage, and Black Tom to their rescue. Jean has a confrontation with Beast about his lies and manipulation. I'm having a lot of fun with X-Force. To me, the main titles are that you should be reading, in my opinion, are X-Force, X-Men, and Marauders. And your opinion may vary, but those are my top ones. We got Stake number one. This is a vampire and her sister who were raised by two vampire cult members, work together to take down vampires. They take down two ambulance workers who were killing humans. They were vampires, but they're like paramedics that would go slaughter their victims, or sorry, their patients for blood. I like this one a lot more than the Cult of Dracula. I like the Cult of Dracula's premise more, but Stake was executed better, and our art was a lot better to me. We have Glory Avatar. This is number 0 through 2. This was written by Alan Moore, by the way. So it's even though he's at Avatar, he's still. He wrote like Necronomicon and Fashion Beast and a bunch of things. Fashion Beast was Alan Moore and the, I think the producer for the Sex Pistols, Malcolm McLean or whatever his name was. But so he has a history with Avatar, but this is pre to the Necronomicon and Fashion Beast, which is the Avatar that most people know because those came around the crossed years. Glory is in the body of a schizophrenic waitress, and she is falling in love with one of the patrons. We get various backstories of Glory as she reads through thrilling comics, which is very much like reading Wonder Woman. Goes from the 40s to present time. There is an evil character, much like Cersei, that is attacking her behind the scenes without her knowing. At the end, she is sucked into the ground and missing. This is like if Alan, you know how Supreme is like Alan Moore taking on the Superman? Well, Glory is sort of like Alan Moore taking on Wonder Woman, and the villain is even like Cersei, so it's like right up my alley. 4 out of 5, you promised me darkness number one. Halley's Comet comes by and gives people powers and sometimes deformities. This is about an immortal sister, Yuko, that gets different powers, and her fire-powered brother, Sebastian, and how they are trying to stop the end of the world brought by the devil worshiper and the anti-everything. It's narrated by Sarah. They meet up with an ally in the form of a cat and get ready to confront the anti-everything. This is a really good black and white comic from Behemoth. They seem to be this seems to be one of the more popular Behemoth titles. It's even been on some of the spec lists. I'd recommend it. It's really a lot of fun. We have Icon number one that we get into the 5 out of 5s. This is DC Milestone. We were rereading this. This won the contest on DC Spotlight. Please check out DC Spotlight for me and Kyle talking about DC Comics. This is and that's located at DCNoisePodcast.com. An alien comes down to Earth that is raised human, just like Superman. And later in life, he becomes a big-time lawyer. One night, his house is invaded by three individuals who think he is a servant because he is black. He is shot and demonstrates his powers in order to scare them straight. Rocket convinces him to be a hero with her as his sidekick. It was a cool number one issue. I loved it. Alien number three from Marvel Comics. Mr. Cruz and his group are attacked by aliens. They run into Danny, his son's girlfriend, posing as a doctor. They are all on the run now, trying to find Danny and the stolen container. I have been really impressed with this Marvel comic, Aliens. I've really been enjoying the plot and the characters that are within it. And the final 5 out of 5 is Ha Ha number 5. A group of kids have to do some mischief to keep their membership in the gang that they're in. One is assigned to steal something from an old lady clown that used to work at a circus. He finds that meeting her was one of the best things that happened to him, and he got to eat some cauliflower casserole because that clown served him up. It's a really cool story. So the 5 out of 5s for this episode were Icon number 1 from DC Comics, Alien number 3 from Marvel Comics, Haha number 5 from Image, Haha number 3 and 4 from Image. Those were the 5 out of 5s. So I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you all for questions. And feel free to send me questions anytime. I bookmark them and I save them for episodes like this. I have to sometimes request them and hope I get them if I don't get them before the episode. But I do like to talk about comics I received back issue wise, and I like to deal with some questions and talk about the industry a little bit. I did talk about briefly in one of the previous episodes how much I was enjoying the 2 issues of G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, that were drawn by Wildman and written by Larry Hama in the 130s. And I try to find some of the back issues in singles, and they were just getting too expensive. So I did find the trades. They were expensive, but then I got a lot of the issues in the trades. So I bought 3 trades of G.I. Joe, and they all came in on eBay this last week. So I want to thank you for listening to Mike M's Weekly Reads. Please check out Geek Brunch with me and Bill Bomer, Geek Brunch Retrocast with me, Rob Krieger, and Chris Ivy, and DC Everything Else with which is on DCNoisePodcast.com with Kirk, Rob, and Joe, and also DC Spotlight with me and Kyle. That one's more regular. That one's supposed to come out every 2 weeks. Sometimes it's every 3 weeks. Geek Brunch is every other week. Geek Brunch Retro is every other week. Mike M's Weekly Read's supposed to be weekly. I'm trying to get it back on schedule. I already have another one in the can. One came out today, and this is another one. So two are in the can. So I'm doing a good job of trying to get caught up. I want to thank you for listening. And enjoy your comics. Talk to you later. As Mike Pendel from the Comic Book Attic would say, enjoy your comics. Talk to you later. Bye.